You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation, brought to you by Go Wild. Go Wild is the fastest growing social media app for the outdoor enthusiast. Hunting, fishing, camping, hiking, backpacking, everything that you enjoy doing outside can be found on the Go Wild app. Now, for more information about Go Wild, just go to wherever you currently download apps, search for it, and download it to your phone, play around with it, search for me. Also, you can go to timetogowild.com, and there's a ton of information on their website as well. So take some time, go check out Go Wild.
Welcome to the DIY Sportsman Podcast with your hosts, Garrett Prawl and Boudreaux Boswell. So how's the Missouri trip been so far?
It's been pretty good. I haven't seen a whole lot of deer. It rained a little bit today. It's supposed to rain until Thursday night. Seen a lot of does and little ones. Just a couple small bucks chasing, but nothing of any size yet. So,
I saw on the Instagram feed that you were scouting some public.
Yeah. I scouted a little bit of public land right here close to the house. I'd been on it once before, but it was late season, so kind of wanted to hit it now to see kind of what scrapes and buck activity I found. And, you know, kind of as I went through it, I had my tracks on my Onyx, and then, like, when I would come across a scrape or a rub, I would mark it, and then any trail I would find, I would, like, stand on the trail, and I would just kind of face that direction and draw a line down it with a line measure tool.
Yep.
And that way I was able to kind of get a bearing on which way the trail was going, and then that way when you look at the map kind of whole picture, you could kind of see which direction the trails were going. So it kind of put out some interesting results after I kind of zoomed out. You know, I think I walked a little over 5 miles, 5.5 miles. So once I looked at the map whole scale, there was some pretty interesting things in there, but it's just, there's a lot of understory on that piece of public, so if you get up 6 feet, you probably can't see 10 yards.
Oh, really? Is this the stuff that's a little bit further north of where your parents are, or is this the stuff that's kind of around your cousin's place?
No, this is stuff just north of us.
Okay. Did you check out that one saddle that we saw on the topo map?
No, I haven't made it there yet.
Gotcha. I was doing a little bit of searching on my own around that area and marked a few waypoints that were, you know, further east of where your cousin's was, and then also some of that same stuff that I think you were in today or yesterday. But some good-looking stuff on the topo, I think, anyway.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I think there was only – I had a couple preset points that I wanted to check out. I think once I got to them, for the most part, there was only, like, one major bust that I got to, and I was just like, this isn't even worth, you know, spending time at. But for the most part, there was sign in most of the area. Some of them may have been on the opposite side of the hill or whatever, but they were pretty close.
Are all the leaves down for the most part down there, or are some of the trees still holding a fair number of leaves?
They're just starting to drop for the most part. It's been windy the past couple of days with the blowing of the storm, so it's still dropping leaves pretty good.
Gotcha. Yeah, we're just on the tail end of that now, where a lot of the leaves are on the ground now up here.
Yeah, we're just on the front end of it starting here, so that's kind of what makes it difficult is, you know, you get up 10, 12 feet and you can't see anything.
So by the time I make it down there next week, it might be timing out pretty well.
Yeah, I think for the most part, especially with this, we got all this rain coming in tonight through Friday. I think that will help knock a lot of them down as well.
Yep. What are the temperatures like?
It's been pretty warm. It was 74 today or 75 today.
Oh,
it got pretty warm today. Yeah, right. And so this little cool front's supposed to push in and bring some rain, and I think it's supposed to keep it still in the low 60s, though, but not really cold at all.
Yeah, that doesn't seem – I mean, obviously for my neck of the woods, that's super warm, but I imagine it's probably just a little bit above average for down there.
Yeah, it's still above average down here. So it's, you know, that's kind of – you know, like I said, I've seen a couple small bucks chasing, but I haven't really seen any any good sign of bucks chasing yet. I've seen a couple decent bucks, but they're just, just walking through. They're not, don't look like they're cruising. They don't look like they're doing anything yet.
How about just big buck sign in general? Anything, any big tracks and scrapes or any rubs that are catching your eye?
Run across a series of rubs on that public, and probably the smallest one was probably the size of a baseball, kind of a good rub line that run through there, and then a couple scrapes that had a couple big tracks in it, but outside of that, really nothing. And it had rained, I guess, the first night I was here, so I tried to hit that right after the rain to try to see what kind of first sign there was, and then I'll probably do it again on Friday because it's supposed to stop raining on Friday, so.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was looking at that. There's so much public, and it's like you can just bury yourself in those topos and just pick out spot after spot after spot. But then you look at a lot of that stuff, and it's like, man, the access to some of these areas, it's like, is it, if the hunting pressure is low, it's like some of those spots, it almost wouldn't even pay to get into those pinch points because there's decent looking pinch points a lot closer to the road and a lot closer to
Yeah,
some of those
right
private
now.
agriculture fields that are, I'm sure they're probably not getting hit too hard.
Yeah, hunting pressure here for bow season is basically non-existent. Youth firearm season was last weekend, so there was a little bit of pressure here and there. I heard maybe three shots was all I heard all weekend. But it's just there's basically no hunting pressure on public land right now anywhere around.
Do they hit it pretty hard once the firearm season comes around?
To a degree, I wouldn't call it really hard. I mean, probably nowhere near what you're used to up there. But there's gonna be some pressure. I mean, that's the kind of the time when you go a little bit deeper than everybody else.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. And then for, let's see, what day was it? Was it Thursday that you shot your doe, Friday?
It would've been Saturday evening, I think. I got in Thursday, rained it on Friday, and then it was Saturday and I shot her.
Okay. And by the looks of those pictures, it looked like it all happened pretty fast. I mean, how long did you even sit in the tree before you had an arrow in the ground?
Less than an hour. So I think I got into the stand at like 3:45. They came out at probably maybe 4 o'clock. It was her and two little ones came out, and then they fed around in the food plot for, I don't know, probably 10 minutes, and then a little spike came out. And I could tell as soon as he was started coming out, she started getting nervous. And he started running her around, and he ran her around for probably 45 minutes. He would run from the food plot I was in to a different food plot. I'd hear him running through the woods, and the whole time her little ones are still in the food plot feeding in front of me. And then so he ran her around for, like I said, probably close to 45 minutes. And then she ended up popping out at like 20 yards right next to me. And she was just so jumpy that when I shot, she dropped probably 8 to 9 inches pretty easy, almost to the point where I almost shot over. And luckily snuck it in just below the spine. And she ran probably 100 yards, 110 yards maybe before she piled up.
Yeah, when you showed me the picture of that rib cage, it looked like it was ended up being pretty decent.
Yeah.
Was there pretty good blood on the ground? I guess you wouldn't really know, but did
Yeah, well, that was the bad part because I called my dad and was like, "Hey, can you come up here?" And so he'd come up there, and I'd been walking around though, because right after I shot her, I shot a field point into the food plot where she was standing, so I had a pretty good reference point of where she was once I got on the ground. And from the time it took my dad to get the text message and get up to the food plot was, I don't know, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and I'd been walking around looking for blood and couldn't find any. So I was, obviously a little nervous at that point. I was like, oh crap. And he walks up and within 3 seconds is like, oh, there's blood, and was out of the food plot before I even seen the blood that he saw in the food plot. And so his squirrel dog had followed him up there. And so we were started a blood trail into the woods a little bit, and his squirrel dog went up ahead of us and, was standing in one spot. And I noticed he was standing there, and I was like, well, Cooper's his name. I was like, well, Cooper's standing in one spot, so he probably found her. And sure enough, he was standing there chewing on her. So,
And that was your first real experience in shooting that new sight, which
yeah.
I mean, for me, I had to shoot that thing a lot before I I felt comfortable enough to where I was taking it out in the woods. And I'm still not quite at the point, I think, where I just flip it around and hunt with it. But you just dove right in.
Yeah, so I put it on. I got it on Saturday morning when the mail ran on Saturday morning, and I got the sight in the mail. And so I slapped it on the bow and, read through the directions and took it outside and shot it to figure out which V I needed, which was, there were some learning errors in there on my part because I thought all the 20-yard tick marks were in the same spot on all the Vs. But then I found out, because I couldn't figure out why I wouldn't get sighting it in very well. But you have to, when you put a new V in, you have to re-sight it in at 20 yards
That makes
and
sense.
then go back to 30 and 40 to figure out if the drop is correct. So once I figured that out, it was pretty simple to figure out which V I needed. And once I had it sighted in, to me, the tick marks are too distracting. Aaron about it, he mentioned that some people, because what I was trying to do was I was referencing like the left hand V in the tick mark, and I was trying to line that up with the left side of the, circle target that he sends.
Yep.
And so once I got it sighted in where I felt, all right, it's hitting accurately, first thing I did was I just flipped it around because the tick marks were too distracting. And I would just, I would start anywhere from 15 yards and I would just walk, and then I'd just stop wherever I was. I'd turn around and draw back and set the V on the target and shoot. And I was impressed at how reliable the ranging distance was. I shot from probably 12 yards to upwards of 45 yards, and I could shoot softball gripe size groups with it, three arrows at varying distances in there, basically.
So you were pretty happy with it from that standpoint.
Yeah, right off the bat, I was confident enough that I was like, all right, I'm, it's staying on and I'm going hunting with it tonight.
So you just took it right that same day and shot a doe with it. And I mean,
Yep,
if she wouldn't have
and
ducked as
probably.
far as she did, you probably would have been pretty much spot on, it sounds like.
Yeah, I would have been spot on, but that little buck had just run her around so much, she was jumpy. And, when she walked out, she looked calm, and I set it that V on there and squeeze it loose, and she dropped to the point I was like, I'm gonna miss over her at 20 yards.
Now, would you, if she would have been at like 40, do you think you still would have had the same level of comfort?
Probably. I mean, I typically won't shoot at a whitetail over 30 for the most part. But at 30 yards, I would have no problem, taking that shot. And that was the thing is, I would have thought when I shot that deer, I would have had to have thought about the sight picture a lot more than I did. I just remember coming to full draw, bringing the V up on her chest, making sure I was like, okay, I can see all the vitals in the chest cavity. And then, just squeeze and pop, it went off. And it was that. It wasn't like I was, super focused on, holding the pin in one specific spot.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So, do you think you're going to keep it on then, at least for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, get a couple. Definitely want to get a couple more, kills in under it. But so far, I've shot it every day, basically, just doing that same thing, just putting the reference target that they send up and shooting it from, 20 to however far out I get, basically, and just verifying that, yep, it's, it works, it shoots the way it should, and that's the biggest thing I've seen with it is sometimes, like if I take a really long break, my first shot, I may reference the V slightly different. I may not bury it as deep into the V. I may
Gotcha.
just like lightly set it in the V. And I've noticed a little bit of vertical difference in that. But if like looking at just a paper target that's all shot up, pretty much everything is good left and right. They're just, minor differences in high and low. So I've got a real good vertical string of, just arrows that have been in the target compared to missing left or missing right.
And then the only thing that you would probably change on it would be to have those V's be a little bit thinner.
Yeah, the V's have, to me personally, and I get the design behind it. They're trying to make a bow hunting sight that's extremely durable. But that's my biggest thing, is the V's are just way too thick. So when you're, on a deer, because I've put, held it out when I had those deer out there 20 or 30 yards, I was holding my bow out, referencing the V on their body. Just trying to get an idea of what the sight picture was going to look like. And, especially on a small yearling deer or a fawn, man, those Vs sometimes cover up pretty much the entire deer. And it's like, holy cow, if I was trying to shoot a fawn at 30 yards, you can't see anything in front of the chest cavity or the back half of the body, basically. So I would definitely narrow those things up tremendously.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I can, like I said, I printed off those 3D printed samples and I'll make one that matches that 14 insert. And the only thing is that they are more flexible. Like you can, if you stick it in the sight, it might be fine. But like if you grab those two little things with your fingers and the 3D printed ones, you can like get them to flex around a bit.
Right.
And then you need a spray paint, obviously.
I just want to see how much of a difference the thinner V's actually would make. Because what I'll probably end up doing is taking like a set of calipers or something and basically scratching on the V, kind of how thick I want it, and then maybe just taking a file or something and trying to file that down to get it thinned out.
Okay. Yeah, a bunch of guys have been asking me too about what I think, because I've like all the videos I've been posting, you can see that sight plain as day. It really stands out with the color. And I've been trying to hold off as much as possible until I've like gotten a few actual deer kills with it. And so for me, last Thursday, that was my first deer that I shot with it.
And what were your initial thoughts with it? I mean, the deer was pretty close, 20 yards, right? Or a
Yeah, I
little
mean,
bit less.
I could have, the deer was close enough that I probably could have just like peeked outside of the peep sight and just instinctively shot it. It was like one of those chip shots you couldn't miss. But I remember looking through the peep sight and the V, and I honestly don't even remember really looking at the tick marks, because usually I'm still at the point where I'm still referencing the tick marks and using those 20-yard ones. But I mean, when it was that close, I just kind of looked at the spot I wanted to hit, and the sight picture seemed right, and I just remember releasing and it hit perfect. Center punch the heart and that doe ran off. So, but I also, it's like for, the beginning of the season, there's been a few times where I've had deer walk through that I haven't shot at, and I've done the same to kind of to put the V on them and see how close it is to what I know the range is. Like, I had a couple smaller yearling bucks come through, one of them at 30, one at 25. And I would just aim at it, and I would get it to where it seemed like the V was about right on the vitals. And then I would like look at the tick marks to see, okay, are these tick marks right on 25 where I know that that deer is standing, or are they off a little bit? And usually they're pretty close enough where I would have hit the
Right.
deer. But I think it's one of those things too, where it's like the more you practice on like 3D targets, or even I guess printed targets that are realistic in size, the more that's going to help.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing, is it's, like you said, it's a bow hunting sight. It's designed to hit the deer in the chest cavity every time. And to me, I think that's what it does well.
Yeah, it's really good at just center punching whatever you're aiming at.
Yeah.
I shot a squirrel with it too.
How did that go?
I didn't, well, I thought it was a good at first. I shot the squirrel with about a 10-yard shot, and it's impossible to shoot squirrels, I'm telling you, man. When they're on the ground scurrying around, they're impossible. It's like by the time you start to pull the trigger on the release, it's like they've gone another 3 feet. So like for this particular squirrel, it was on a tree about 10 yards away, and it was running down, and it stopped on the tree. So I drew back, and I just, it was kind of silhouetted against the side of the tree, so I knew I had basically a ground as a backstop. I wasn't going to lose the arrow, and I shot, and the squirrel dropped out of the tree and just kind of flopped and lay there motionless. And I was like, all right, cool, I got some squirrel, I can take it home, fry it up or whatever. And this was right at last light when I knew that like no more deer were going to come in. I could hear I would have been able to hear a deer if it was going to come in. And I was like, well, the hunt's over. I'm going to hunt someplace else tomorrow. So I just took the shot, and I started getting all my stuff together and started like basically climbing down out of the tree. And I hear some rustling in the leaves. And I look over, and the squirrel gets up and runs away. It was like 5 minutes after. I was like, what the? Like, you got to be kidding me. I don't know how like that could have possibly. I can understand if it was like a blunt tip arrow or something like that, where I just kind of knocked it out temporarily. But I was shooting a cut on contact broadhead and feathers, so I don't know like what could have stunned that squirrel that to the point where it got up and ran away. That was
Maybe
very
you
strange.
actually didn't. Maybe you didn't hit it. Maybe you hit so close to it that when the arrow flexed and then snapped over, the arrow actually like smacked the squirrel on the head and stunned him.
It's possible. I mean, that close, you don't really know what happens because it's all just like instantaneous.
Yeah, I don't know what would. I've done that before with a 22 or a 17. I've shot squirrels head shooting them and just skin just the top of their head, basically just enough to take the hair off the top of their head, and they hit the ground and pick them up. This is when I used to wear vests. I pick them up, just stick them in the vest behind me, and keep on hunting. And then, like you said, it may be 5 minutes, it may be 10 minutes later, all of a sudden the squirrel behind you in the vest comes alive and wants out, and it's a mad scramble to get out of that vest as quickly as possible. But I can say I've had that happen probably six or seven times, and I no longer use a vest. I carry them by hand now. So if that happens, I can just drop them.
Yeah, I guess it's po that's the only thing that makes sense is maybe I just like nicked the skull, not enough to like actually puncture it, but just grazed it basically. Just gave him a ringer. But yeah, the other thing too is I've seen a lot of black squirrels in the area. I don't know how common they actually are, but I've seen like two of them in the last just few sits that I've been out there.
Yeah, I think it depends. There's some localities where they have a pretty good pocket, basically, of black squirrels. I know an area that in northern Arkansas that's got a pretty good pocket of black squirrels. I think they're the eastern gray squirrel variety, but they're actually black. A lot of people may see some and think they're a black squirrel, but they were actually just a squirrel that's been eating a heck of a lot of walnuts and gotten stained from the walnut holes. But
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, that doe that I shot, this was on one of those metro hunts. And normally how like when guys talk about beast style hunting, it's always in reference to mature bucks. And
right.
usually hunting does is something totally different and it's a different style and they're bedding differently and all this sort of stuff. Well, the way that I set up on this particular hunt was basically like pure beast style, and the fact that there was cattails and then there was this big peninsula of hardwoods, and it was just a mix of poplar and really dense buckthorn, and it just stuck right out into these cattails, and then along the very tip there was brush that extended out into the cattails for 30, 40, 50 yards. And so I basically, because I had the ability to, a few weeks prior, I went in and just cleared out a whole bunch of that buckthorn along the tip of that point and just kind of cleared out an area maybe 15 yards in diameter. And so when I actually went in to hunt it, I got in there, I don't know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, got in there real quiet, picked one of those poplar trees that was about 10 yards away from the actual edge of the cattails, and I just climbed up and got set up in the tree. And maybe 45 minutes before dark, I could hear some rustling in the cattails, and I got ready, and then nothing happened. And then, like 10 minutes later, more rustling in the cattails, got ready, nothing happened. And now it's getting fairly close, it's about sunset, and there's all these little birds, chickadees, and whatnot, making a bunch of noise, jumping around in the marsh, sounding like deer. But then I heard that unmistakable rustle again in the cattails, and this time, like, I knew for sure, like, there was no doubt it was a deer. And so it kept getting closer, sounded like it was right in front of me, and I couldn't see it. Finally, it appeared about 30 yards right on this trail that's coming out of the cattails, facing straight toward me. And this doe, I'm sure she was bedded right there at this point. She was just slowly working her way in, and no fawns, just really methodical and slow. Like she would take a step, look around, scan, start eating some grass. 30 seconds later, she'd take another two steps, repeat. So when I first saw her at 30 yards, by the time she got to about 10 yards, it was a legitimate, like, I don't know, 7, 8 minutes. She was moving really slow and really cautiously in an area where typically there's not a whole ton of hunting pressure, especially in that spot. I don't know that anybody's hunted that particular area on that peninsula for years and years. And so eventually she got right to the edge of the swamp at 10 yards, and I thought she was might take the trail that goes right under my tree, and I never would have got a shot. Luckily, she spun 90 degrees, started eating some of the grass again, and then she looked back behind her where she was coming from, and that gave me the opportunity to draw back. And like I said, I mean, at that point, she pretty much filled up the sight housing. And so I just released the arrow and she took off and ran 50 yards into the cattails, and that was it. But I thought it was so interesting how her demeanor and the way she acted and the way she bedded was so similar to what guys typically correlate with what a buck would do in that type of scenario. And I don't know if that was the fact that she didn't have any fawns and she was an older deer. Maybe that has something to do with it. You know, a lot of times people don't really talk about old does acting differently than young does, except for, you know, if they are more cautious. But this act more like a buck than a doe. So I thought that was really interesting.
Do you think maybe she may have been a little bit more alerted because you went in and cleared out some of that vegetation before the hunt?
I really don't think so. I mean, this place is typically, I mean, here's the thing too, is that was like weeks prior that I did that, and it had rained multiple times. Like I would think maybe like the first couple of days, if she was walking through there, she'd have been kind of freaked out. But beyond that certain point, and she didn't act nervous. She didn't act skittish at all. She was just really cautious, if that makes any sense. Like she was flicking her tail and eating. She was just moving really slow and really cautiously, and I think that was just how she acted.
Yeah, it was a you sent me a picture. That was a pretty big body doe. At least it looked like in the sled. I mean, it was filling up the entire sled you had.
Yeah, I didn't have my scale working, but when I quartered it up in the garage, I measured all the stuff separately. The hindquarters were 60 pounds. The front quarters were 40 pounds. No, I'm saying this wrong. The hindquarters are 40. The front quarters were 20. So there it gets you 60. The rest of the carcass was another 60. And then the back straps and the tenderloins were like 11. So she was like 131 dressed, all said and done. So I figured the live weight must have been probably around 165, 170, and that was what we had to drag out, was that full body weight, because we couldn't gut them there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, definitely looked like a, at least a 3.5-year-old deer, easily.
Is that method that I showed you with the when I sent the picture to you for the tooth wear? So I was doing like a little bit of research. I've never really done this a whole lot in the past, but it seems like the tooth replacement and tooth wear aging, it's like you can tell obviously a fawn from a 1.5-year-old, you can tell a 1.5-year-old from a 2.5-year-old, but from that 2 to sort of 5.5, and then especially beyond 5.5, it gets kind of fuzzy.
Yeah, it gets real fuzzy. It kind of becomes all, personal opinion. But pretty much up to, you can, like you said, you can a fawn, a 1.5, a 2.5. You really get anything above 2.5, and you're getting into that whole personal opinion. Some people say you can go to the 3.5 mark, but when you see like a picture of a jawbone and somebody's like, that's a 5.5-year-old deer. It's like, dude, that is a wild guess. It's like, that deer could be 4.5, that deer could be 6.5, that deer could be 7.5. Nobody really knows. The best way to do it is the annuli, basically, where they take the, I think it's two front teeth, and basically they cut it and dye it and count rings like on a tree, basically, to age a deer. That's really the only accurate way to be able to do it.
Is that something I can do by myself?
No,
cross
you actually have to
section with a
send them off
hacksaw
of.
and
Yeah,
use
I
a
wish.
microscope at
You got to
work.
get them. You got to get them paper thin. Unless you got something that'll slice it paper thin at work.
Nope. Nope.
But I think, like Missouri, I noticed when I checked in my dough, they asked a question on there that kind of threw me for a loop, and I haven't researched it enough to figure out. They ask if the distance from the front corner of the eye to the nose was greater than 4.5 inches. And so that one kind of threw me for a loop, trying to figure out what they're, I'm guessing they're trying to use that as like an age strategy. Because you think about like a, it was, this deer was a 2.5-year-old deer. And it had a snout to nose or eye distance longer than that 4.5. So that's what I was trying to figure out, is if they're trying to figure out how many of these deer are, have a longer snout compared to the older deer, which might have the shorter snout. I haven't looked into that since I filled that out, but I thought that was a really interesting question they asked.
Yeah, I guess I always assume that a deer's head sort of, if anything, grows longer as it gets older. Just as
See, to
their
me,
whole head grows in general. But I mean, if their head getting bigger doesn't
and it,
necessarily mean that ratio stays the same. Maybe they're
right.
maybe the head gets a back end rather than the.
Yeah, and it could be, but she had a long snout, and we pulled the jawbone on her, and she was only 2.5. So,
Because you think about fawns, they
I
got
don't.
a fawn's got such a short, stubby little head.
Right. And I don't know. I may have to look into that a little more to see what their theory behind that is.
Maybe they're just trying to figure out, maybe if they know that, like, once a deer is beyond 1.5 years old, maybe that's the point where, like, 85, 90% of them have distances longer than whatever that number is. So maybe they're just trying to
Yeah,
get
that
a
could
rough
very well
percentage
be.
of what the harvest percentage is that's beyond 1.5 years old.
Yeah, and especially with does, trying to figure out, okay, what is our age percentage of does being harvested? Is it less than 1.5, or is it more than 1.5?
Right.
Which could very well be. But
Do you
I
have
thought it
any
was an
links
interesting question.
or contacts or whatever for doing the tooth annuli aging? Is that something I can just Google and figure out how to do that? Or where to send it to?
Yeah, there's a. I know there's a couple companies out of oh crap, Montana. Robbie Denning on Rock Slide. I don't know if he does it, but he's a real big proponent of it, and he pushes doing it for a lot of deer. If I remember right, it used to be about $75 to have it done. When I killed my black bear in Arkansas, it was actually mandatory that I had to send a tooth in for aging, and that's what they did, was they pulled one of the teeth out of it, out of the skull, and sent it in for aging.
Yeah, I think we got to do that in Minnesota too for black bears.
Yeah. So, and I like I said, I think there's a couple companies that do it. I know one of them's out of like Montana, so I think that's where they sent my black bear too. But yeah, you should be able to Google it, or if you're on Rock Slide, you can jump on there and get a hold of Robbie Denning, and he will point you in the right direction, I'm sure.
I got his book, and I feel like I do remember reading something about that. So maybe there's a link within the book. If not, I suppose I can reach out to him.
Yeah, I'm sure. But I think it's something interesting that, a lot of people, if I don't know if the prices came down or not, but if the price has come down enough, I think it would be good for most people to send in and find out, because I'm sure, a lot of people misage deer just based off antlers or whatever, and especially does. I always get a kick out of people saying, "Well, I only hunt mature deer," and I kind of chuckle and giggle a little bit, because how many mature does have they let walk by them and they've not killed them? Well, if you hunt mature deer, you would have killed that deer.
Yeah, I'm so bad at aging does that I don't even try. It's like
Yeah.
if it's an adult doe, I'm shooting it, and if it's a metro hunt, I'm shooting
Yeah.
whatever walks by. Here we go, from Robbie's book. says, it's the gold standard. See my outfitting website at wescoutforyou.com/4 is the number. We scout number four, U, letter U, for more information on having your buck lab age. So it sounds like if we go to that website, we'll be able to figure out where to send it to.
Yeah, he may even do it now. I don't know if he does or not, but I do know he's a one of the big proponents of it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't really care other than it's just I'm curious, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it would give you a good idea. You know, obviously when you start getting into that 3.5, 4.5, 5.5, especially in those, you know, especially in the field, it's going to be really hard to distinguish them apart. But I will say I killed a doe in high school that I called. So this was back in 2000 and oh, probably 2004, 2005. I killed her and I thought she had CWD because she was skin and bones. But when I even called the conservation, I was like, hey, you guys might want to come out and look at this deer, yada, yada, yada. And I can't remember if they came out or not, but that deer had no teeth in its head whatsoever. So I mean, it would have been difficult to even age that deer.
So it might
But
have
that's
just
just what I
been,
remember was there was,
might have just been
yeah,
almost
there was
10 plus year
literally,
old, just super old deer.
yeah, there was no teeth in that deer's head whatsoever.
Huh.
And so she was on the downhill. She was well beyond the downhill. She was almost rock bottom.
Took her out of her nursing home years.
Yeah. Yeah, that is exactly right.
So is your plan then for the rest of this week to just pretty much any day it's sunny, you're going to be out there? Are you going to start sitting all day?
Probably not. I don't sit all day. It's never really been my type, but I'm gonna try to hit. I've typically only been hunting the evenings right now, just trying to get an idea of, you know, what kind of movement is going on. 'Cause, you know, I can hunt one of these food plots and probably gonna see, you know, 6 to 15 deer any given night. So I'm trying to see what's out there checking the does that are out in that food plot and how much chasing's going on. And been seeing a little bit of increase of it. And probably going to start hunting a little some mornings, especially with daylight savings time. What is that? Sunday? Yeah,
Probably.
with
Seems like it's
daylight
always
savings
about this
time
time of
happening
year.
on, yeah, I think it's the 4th, so Sunday or something like that. Start hunt more mornings. Probably going to try to move in on that public land and see, set up on some of that, you know, more active big buck sign, and see what I can turn up over there.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like when I get down there will, I think, depend a lot on how the Minnesota weekend goes. 'Cause I'm going back down to the southeast part of the state for the opener on Saturday. So I'll drive down Friday night. And it looks like so far we're going to get a west wind. And I've been scouting virtually some of these areas. And so I had, you know, kind of the more common, like west, southwest, south, northwest, you know, the common wind directions for this time of the year all sort of picked
Right.
out. And I found some really good spots for like southeast winds, but we don't get those quite as commonly as we did back in September, those real warm season breezes.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that just looks like. So I guess to set this up and give it a little bit more a background about what it looks like down there for firearms, it's not going to be the same like it was for the public land challenge because there wasn't a whole lot of pressure that time of year, whereas from everybody that I've talked to and everybody that I know that has been down there during a firearm season, it can range from heavy pressure to absolute chaos with like guys pulling up in buses and like 15, 20 people loading out and doing drives, you know, for all these hills and doing pushes and stuff. But it sounds like there's two main strategies that can work and are very effective. And I know people have shot some really big bucks down there doing these. Number one is to expect the pressure and basically just hunt the escape routes, which in that type of terrain, it's usually if you have access up high and you know fields and parking lots and that type of thing, and then down low, it's all just wooded and thick and there's no access down low. then if you hunt the spines of the ridges that lead down into that low valley, that those ravines, those drainages, those tend to be the areas that the deer will take on their route to get to that security cover. And so I've seen a couple giants that have been taken that way, oftentimes even pretty close to parking lots, closer than you would expect. But what the other, I guess, plan would be is, not all this stuff is really obvious and easy to access for hunters. There's some of this stuff, because I mean, there's a mix of WMAs and state land and county land and whatnot down there. Some of this stuff, it doesn't look huntable unless you were to look at it through like Onyx or something like that, because you might have no signs, you might have no parking lots. It just happens to be public land, and it might be really hard to access because of the terrain. For example, there's a place down there that I found that's it's all public, but it's on the side of like a highway with a guardrail. There's no parking or anything. You'd have to somehow find a place to park along the side of the road or somewhere, and then backtrack along the edge of the highway, and then climb up a 500-foot fairly steep bluff that has some yellow and orange on the slope angle shading to get in there. That's really the only way you can access. But then once you get up there, it's like you can cover from that one spine like two or three drainages that all have just huge private land, agriculture, big blocks of land where you look at it and it's like, man, that could be an outfitter, that could be some rich dude who has, QDMA for the last 10 years. So it's like you never know. You might not run into anybody up there, or you might just run into, those private land guys, but the odds of running into other public land hunters, I would think, would be extremely low. So those are kind of the two options. What I'm leaning more towards, I think, is the second of the two. Doing the extra legwork to get into some of those really remote spots where I might not see as many people, and I might be able to get by on some of that more actual just unpressured rut activity, as opposed to just strictly the deer that are, sort of on their escape patterns. So we'll see how that goes. It might be the
Right.
right move, it might be the wrong move, but there's only one way to find out.
Yeah, that's a thing, especially trying to find those pieces of public land, like you said, that may not have the parking lot, that may not have the pull-off areas. Like that's similar to here. There's a lot of public land that you can access just from the roadside ditch. You can just ease off the road and ease up to the off the main part of the road and be able to access that piece of public land without actually having to pull off in a road or something that's going to attract a lot more attention.
Right, exactly. So we'll see. I mean, I think my standards are going to be fairly high for that hunt, mostly because I'm using a shotgun. So, I mean, and obviously the caliber of deer down there can be really good. So after that first day goes by, I guess we'll see if I need to adjust my standards or not, because I'm really only going to have hopefully just like 2 to 4 days down there. If I haven't shot anything after 4 days, I might just call it and then drive down to Missouri,
Right.
because I'm dealing with sort of, a few extra days or a few limited days in Missouri before that firearm season kicks in, and I don't want to pay for the extra tag.
Yeah, that's the big thing. So when you get here, what's your plan? Are you gonna try to scout some public land the first day? What's coming here? What's your plan right off the bat then?
I think, well, it depends on what time of the day I get down there, probably. If I end up getting down there late, what I might do is start the first thing the next morning and start to do some of those routes, do some spot checks. There's a lot of the areas that I marked off on Onyx are basically places that I can make fairly short, simple loops from the road, provided it's not too thick with the understory, and just be able to spot check some of these pinch points, some of these saddles, some of these ravines that I think might have trails that are crossing. And that might be the first half of that day. And then maybe in the afternoon, I decide what to do. Do I want to hunt? Do I want to keep scouting? And just kind of figure it out from there. If what I'm, you know, what I might do is, if the public land scouting hasn't been going great, I might just come back and do like a food plot sit or something like that in the evening,
Right.
But if it ends up looking really good, maybe I'll just end up sitting out there. I guess I'll play it by ear.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, even if you get in late, it's nothing to run up to the food plot and be able to hunt. You're going to see deer, no doubt. So just, I mean, you can keep that in the back pocket, like you said. That's kind of what I've been doing, is just, haven't been pressuring a lot, but kind of want to see what activity's going on.
Yep.
But haven't found anything good on the public land to really hit hard yet. Hopefully after this rain, it may get some deer up moving. So, even youth season, they had a big buck competition for the youth hunters, and there really wasn't a whole lot of big deer turned in. I think the one that ended up winning, it was maybe only like 100, 150 inches or so. So we're
Only one
still,
50? That's a pretty good deer.
Only 150. Yeah, most of them were smaller, but yeah, it seems like most of the bigger deer around here haven't got up and started moving yet.
Gotcha. Well, then hopefully I end up timing it right.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be a little bit later this year around here. For the most part, we've got one pretty decent 10 point. He's probably 135, 140. I've seen him once or twice, but he seems to be slipping out right after dark. So,
When you say see them, like with binoculars, like glassing them, or just like
yeah.
driving on the road?
Yeah, glassing him. He was out here in the front yard 2 nights ago, about 30 minutes after dark, I guess. So he was, I don't know, 60 yards from the house. So
Yeah, I would think that once this rain stops, either number one, you're gonna see a lot of deer probably, I would imagine, on that field. And then, like you said, too, you'll be able to find out what are the most fresh grapes like that the next day after.
yeah, that's kind of my big plan, is once this rain lets up, I guess it's supposed to be Thursday night into Friday. You're gonna hit that public land again. I've already got a lot of the scrapes marked, and I kind of marked them as, like, I kind of numbered them in a system of, one being the most fresh to like five being an old scrape. I have them labeled in there, like scrape, and then have it labeled as a number, basically. And that gives me an idea of which ones to hit first to see if they've still freshened them back up after the rainfall, to know how I want to hunt that area.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Well, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. So, hopefully, we'll be able to
Yeah,
get
it's
some
gonna be a good
action.
time, that's for sure.
Yep. Probably be able to do another podcast while we're down there. Make it
Yeah,
live.
hopefully be able to, knock out at least one. So,
Sounds good. Hunting public is in Missouri right now, too. At least some of them are.
yeah, I guess Aaron killed the deer on his family farm.
Yep.
So yeah, looked like a pretty good deer. So
Cool.
I don't know what part of Missouri they're in, but I know they just published that one, and I think they were supposed to meet up with another collaborative hunt. I think it was with,
Hush.
I don't even know who it was now. Yeah, maybe that's who it is. So, yeah, it'll be interesting for sure.
Cool. Well, I'll keep you posted on the travel plans and how the Minnesota hunt goes.
Yeah, definitely. Just keep me in the loop. I'll be around here hitting up scouting areas ahead of time. Hopefully have a better idea by the time you start down here on what's a good sign and what's not. So,
Sweet. Sounds good. That'll do it for this week. As always, make sure to give the podcast network a review on iTunes. Follow the Sportsman's Nation on Facebook, Instagram, and wherever you stream your podcast episodes. Bobby and I are both using Arrow Hunter tree saddles. Whether you're already a hardcore mobile hunter, toting around a lightweight stand for miles in search of overlooked spots, or you're simply looking to reduce weight from your current setup, a hunting saddle can be a great option to look into. Bobby and I are both running Arrow Hunter saddles this year. You can find more information and ordering instructions at arrowhunter.us. As always, thanks for listening.